Welcome to El Telejohn's La Liga Weekly. The great fix continues. I've always said that the referees, the media, the league, everybody is biased in favour of Real Sociedad. Don't believe me? On this weekend, they played a Granada side made up of four school kids, three autograph hunters, the kit man, the woman off reception, and a couple of those surly blokes who hang around football clubs for loosely defined reasons. Also, poor old Real Madrid. Now, they would wish that they could go back and not pick half of their players, especially the back four, three of whom gave away penalties, and the other one scored an own goal. Enjoy the papers over the next fortnight, Zizou. Messi finally got a rest, and we found out why he never wants to rest again. He came on at halftime and showed that even when he doesn't kick the ball, he's better than everybody else. Actually, I'm not sure why the players are so tired, given that every match is now 60 minutes long, punctuated by VAR rest breaks. Get on with it. We've had the first managerial sacking of the season. Terry will no longer have to rewrite his tactical notes five times a game when he's watching Celtic and go. And we've also had the season's most brainless red card. Edgar Mendes of Alaves, already on a yellow, by the way, wanders off to the side of the pitch and kicks a stray ball back into play. 34 minutes into a six-pointer with fellow strugglers Levante. Round of applause. Well played, Edgar. Terry, straying off on the subject of genius decisions by footballers, straying off La Liga. Have you seen Ademola Lookman's penalty?
I have, yes. Yeah. I read about it on social media until watching it on Match of the Day, and I had some idea of what he'd done. But not
how badly he did it. That was the other thing, wasn't it?
It's just illogical, isn't it?
So if you don't know, everybody, it's the Fulham West Ham game, big game for Fulham. The 1-1 game, haven't they, since coming back up?
Yeah.
So West Ham scoring the 91st minute, Fulham win a penalty. So it's the 98th minute by the time he takes a penalty, and Ademola Lookman goes for the Panenka. And Fabianski, he could have dived the other way, got back up and saved it, couldn't he?
Yeah, I'm not sure it actually would have reached the goal. It was that poor. Yeah. I mean, Fabianski dived, didn't he? Went down low to his right and then just sort of nonchalantly leant across and
basically caught it.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, in La Liga, you'd never get absolutely shambolic games, do you, Terry? So, yes. Shall we start there? Shall we start at Mestalla?
Well, I actually yesterday I actually have a recovery session after the two games, because people that listen know I'm doing every game over the weekend and doing reports on all the players. I had to have a recovery session after the two Sunday afternoon games. So Getafe Villarreal followed by Real Sociedad Granada was just too much for me to do, to then go into the next game, which I was Levante Alaves or Valladolid against Athletic. I needed a recovery session because both of those games, for various reasons, Getafe was their systems and then Granada the system there. But and then to top it all off, once I'd recovered and then sat down to watch Valencia Real Madrid, all hell broke loose. It was actually, sometimes there's no logic in football, and we look at 80% of the games, and you think we can predict a rough outcome. We know it's not going to go horribly wrong. You assume it's not going to go horribly wrong. The better teams normally win, but then that's why the underdogs always have a chance, because teams can implode. You can get away with three or four players playing bad, but sometimes, even the best teams, the whole bloody lot, have a nightmare. Yeah. And that gives a team, an underdog, a chance to win a game of football.
It sort of started reasonably normally, didn't it? And Benzema scored a goal. And then it was the penalties, wasn't it? The penalties, conceding the penalties was crazy. The whole farce around the first penalty he saved, didn't it? So Carlos Soler took the penalty. It was saved. He then came back to him and he had an open goal to kick it into, didn't he? And he hit the post and it went back to Musa, who then did kick it in. They celebrated like it was a goal, and then they decided that there was encroachment, and so they ended up taking it again. So it was just, everything went crazy. Is that an excuse for how Real Madrid played?
No.
Is it? I mean, we haven't been massively impressed by them. And, you know, our general verdict on Real Madrid is that they've just done enough to get by. They've found ways of winning games. And then to, you know, that game last night, they didn't find a way of winning a game. Everything went wrong for them.
Yeah, this reminds me, not the against the Manchester City game in the Champions League, the second game, where they conceded ridiculous goals. And they have this ability to do that. In this particular game, I think it was sheer complacency after playing really well in the opening minutes of the game, scoring the goal, deservedly being ahead, and playing against a Valencia team who had been severely weakened. And that's where I thought complacency set in, where they suddenly thought, this is going to be a stroll. And before you know it, you know, things start to go against them. And I was waiting, even at 4-1, I was waiting for a response, and it just never came. Because even at 4-1, with the amount of time that was left in the game, you're thinking, do you know what? If they get the next goal, if they get, you know, get back in it. We've seen it recently against Shakhtar Donetsk. Was it that home? They had a go.
Back to 3-2.
Got back to 3-2. And then, you know, you just think that they've still got the ability to somehow get two or three goals and close the game up and at least get a draw out of it. But there was no response from Real Madrid. So that must be, apart from all the other stuff that went on, that must be a concern. And also, I think that sometimes as a manager, you can put it down to just one game, but that isn't just one game. This has happened before this season. And it was just ludicrous. The penalty, me and you were talking on WhatsApp, weren't we, as it was debating that the law on that.
Yeah.
Because Yunus Musa did encroach, clearly. Overlooked the fact that Lucas Vasquez
Also,
and also Varane was leaning, the upper part of his body was in the penalty area. So when you do look at it back on VR, there's three players. I was confused because the initial attempt from Carlos Soler rebounded back to him. Then he had another attempt to hit the post. Yunus Musa then breaks in and scores with the third attempt at goal. And I was confused, as I understand if you encroach and the ball rebounds straight back to you and you have the attempt, that's straightforward. But because there was another attempt from Soler after the missed penalty, then I was wondering, does that count encroachment? Or, and then I was confused as to, well, if he's encroached, why Valencia getting another chance from the penalty spot?
So they wouldn't, would they? Because if it was only Musa who was encroaching, that would have been an indirect free kick, no goal. So the officials did get it right, didn't they? It just took a long time because they had to decide that if both sets of players are encroaching, then it's a retake. But if only your side encroaches, then you get penalised. That's effectively it.
Exactly.
Isn't
it a worry, though, that I'm of a certain age and been involved in football all my life, and I'm still learning the laws of the game. They were straightforward for the first 45 years of my life. And now it's just still gone.
Basically, what happened in the first 40-odd years of your life, Terry, is that people made mistakes and no one knew. So, you know, that would have been a goal, wouldn't it, before technology?
Yes.
Because you've said it would have been Moose's goal, wouldn't it? And that's it. So we wouldn't have been talking about Carlos Soler's hat trick of penalties. The young guy would have got the goal, wouldn't he? But VAR, the officials and the VAR, they dominate the game now, don't they?
Yes.
Every weekend in the league, every weekend in the Premier League, the penalty count is just extraordinary now, isn't it? And the number of goals that are scored that we think are scored and then get ruled out for offside. So the whole, you know, the history of the last couple of seasons would be very different without the VAR, because it just sits really heavily on top of the game, doesn't it? And they haven't even got I'd forgotten literally that La Liga didn't have goal line technology until because that was another shambles, wasn't it? Because you're sort of thinking that's probably gone in. The Varane, he sort of slices an own goal, doesn't he? And Courtois catches it, but has he carried it over the line or not? And the answer is probably, but we were never quite certain. They had about 15 goes at it, trying to find a really clear angle of it being over the line. And you sort of think it must be, but I don't know. I'm never quite sure. I saw it massively over the line.
There was one angle where it was well over the line. And they're also, to complicate it, they were looking at an earlier foul in the build up to the goal.
Yeah.
So the scrutiny that goes on. I must admit, I'm watching games now, John, and every time a goal goes in, I'm waiting to see it confirmed.
Yeah.
So it's killing that instinct that we all have when a team scores, your team concedes or whatever. So it must be tough on the players that pretty much every goal their team is scoring, they're then waiting for confirmation that it's going to be allowed, because that seems to be the case now with every goal.
Did you see the stat about Marcelo? It's basically, I haven't got it handy, but basically they haven't lost a game in which he plays. So, sorry, they haven't lost a game that he's missed. I think they've lost nine in which he's played. I think that's probably since the resumption of football last season. Stats can be misleading, but that's quite heavily against him, isn't it? That stat, in terms that basically they lose games when he plays.
Yeah, it is. And I think it was, I mean, he wasn't to blame for last night. He was partly to blame, like, you know, the rest of the team. But it was tough on him. It was tough on Isco. I think what you get with players that come into the team every now and then that probably realise that the manager doesn't really trust them. He's kind of doing them a favour and picking them in games where he thinks the team should get away with playing them and maybe, you know, and win the game. And then they don't play to their full potential. And I think that was the case with those two players last night, particularly Isco and Marcelo, who don't usually play, that they're playing below par because they're lacking confidence. And both players were poor, as were the majority of the Real Madrid team. I'm looking at the performance of Real Madrid last night. I'm thinking Benzema took his goal well, but other than that, he was quiet. Modric and Valverde in midfield didn't do anything wrong. And they were the only two that you could say approached anywhere near their potential in terms of the performance levels. The rest of the team were awful. I mean, Courtois would get away with criticism because he's conceded an own goal on three penalties. But it was, I mean, one time, Valencia had two goals from one attempt on target.
Yeah.
So Real Madrid were dominating the game. They were a far better team, but just had this ability in their match last night. I mean, the Ramos one, the penalty Ramos gave away, it's inexplicable. And you know, VAR picked that up. The referee probably didn't see it because it was so obvious. But when he looked at the replay on VAR, it still took him three or four attempts to make his mind up. And you're thinking, that's the most, one of the most blatant penalties for handball we're going to see this season, because most of the others are involuntary. He swiped across and knocked it away. I mean, it might have looked intentional. I have to believe it wasn't. It was just a movement of his arm that looked like he was just knocking the ball away from his opponent with his hand, and he's putting the penalty here. But the decision making from Real Madrid was shambolic. It was awful, and it cost them heavy.
Yeah, the VARs have got to get on with it, haven't they? The referee and the VAR combination. What really annoys me is that when you think he's going to have to go over to their monitor and check this one, but they don't. We have 2 minutes of the VAR checking it, and then the referee goes over and checks it as well. And you think that's just taking twice as long now. It's ruining the flow of the game. Yeah. Anyway, shall we?
We moaned, didn't we, at half time with the 4 minutes added on when it should have been at 10.
Yeah, a single VAR had been more than 4 minutes, hadn't it? I can't remember which. It was probably the first penalty VAR.
Yeah, it also for the first penalty, they had to VAR the handball from Lucas Vasquez first. And then when the penalty was taken, there was another episode of VAR to decide how that was going to play out. So there was a lot more than 4 minutes should have been added on to the first half.
Right, so Real Madrid were without Eden Hazard and Casemiro because they had tested positive for COVID-19, but the rest of the players were able to play. Granada, however, had some positive tests, and they weren't able to play basically the rest of their team. That was the reference at the beginning. So a bizarre situation. And it's to do with Granada having been in the Europa League, and so the players haven't had time to get a test to show a negative test. It's good to be careful about the COVID. I grant you that. But the other option was simply to postpone the game against Real Sociedad. We're not anyway in La Liga. You look at, you know, you go down the games played column, and teams have played different numbers of games, haven't they? Between, you know, 7, 8, and 9, the teams have played. So it wouldn't be disastrous to the competition to have not played that game. But they did play the game. So Real Sociedad ended up winning by a couple of goals to nil. And then the, you know, all of these new players for you to make notes on, Terry, of which, obviously, the goalkeeper, it's only 18, wasn't he? But they kept him busy. He had a tremendous game.
Angel Jimenez, 18-year-old debutant, made two or three really good early saves, which obviously helped his confidence and belief. He then went on to save a William Jose penalty, and he was sensational. And it was, I mean, it's hard to judge young players. Easier to judge the goalkeeper because the action is in and around him. He doesn't rely on other players to pass him the ball and stuff like that. So it's hard to judge the other youngsters because you can judge one or two if they come into a settled team. But when there was, it ended up with nine players making their debut for Granada. And the big issue was that they played in Cyprus on Thursday, and I think it's Antonio Puertas and the manager Diego Martinez have tested positive, and all the other players that travelled to Cyprus were then told they couldn't travel to San Sebastian to play against Real Sociedad. So the only ones left were all attacking players for Granada. So not only did they have to bring all these young players in, they then had to put up a Mike Kennedy, played left back. Jorge Molina played in the number 10 role. I was surprised that Soldado came off at half-time along with Kennedy. It was almost, they had the reserve goalkeeping coach as the manager on the bench because none of the coaching staff could travel because they were part of the group that went to Cyprus. So there's a self-isolation, you know, debate that has to go on, that obviously the players that travelled on the same aeroplane as Puertas and Diego Martinez, as you said, they haven't had time to get the negative coronavirus tests. So it, to be honest, it was the match, it was a poor performance from Real Sociedad, but they got two early goals. And you kind of felt then they got complacent, got sloppy, got untidy. Oyarzabal came off at half time, and there was also an element from the, you know, the Real Sociedad players that they kind of went easy on Granada. You know, they felt sympathy with a load of young players playing together in one match. And I was I was grateful that Real Sociedad didn't hammer it home and win by, because when they scored two goals early on by the 27th minute, I was thinking, oh no, don't, this would be really, really tough on them.
8-0 or something.
Yeah, that's what I assumed might happen. But thankfully, Real Sociedad weren't at their best. They took their foot off the gas. And despite having numerous attempts at goal, the goalkeeper, Angel Jimenez, was a brilliant day for him to save the penalty as well, topped it all off. He made, I would say, 8-9 saves. And he was fantastic. So, to be honest, the game was a waste of time.
Yeah. Could have just given Real Sociedad the points. Or postpone the game, which would have been another idea, wouldn't it? Right, Atletico beat Cadiz, last week you said are in a relegation battle, dealt before by that league position, and they were well beaten by actually some nice performance and again, probably crucially, Terry, a couple of early goals. João Félix, Marcos Llorente scored. Luis Suarez got one. He looked offside, but I'm not complaining because and then João Félix with a beautifully taken goal in the 90th minute. So good from Atleti, isn't it? Because obviously we're full of praise for Real Sociedad, but if all the games got played and Atleti won their games in hand, they would be top.
Yes, they would be 3 points clear. But they'll be looking at Real Madrid. They're a point above Real Madrid and they've got a game in hand. And although I'm saying that, we're 7 and 8 games in for Atletico and Real Madrid. So it's not, you know, majorly important at the moment. It's a boost to Atletico because in previous seasons, where we've tipped them to do well, they've started the season slowly. And they've never really genuinely been in the race. That's the last couple of seasons. But this season, they've got to the best start of the expected teams that could win La Liga. And, you know, they're doing everything right. They're scoring more goals. They're more prolific in front of goals. João Félix is certainly coming up with the goods. Luis Suarez is a good foil for João Félix. It's a good partnership. Llorente is amongst the goals as well. I'm not buying into the fact they're going to do this every week. I don't think they need to. And they've only conceded two so far this season. So everything at the moment is going well. It's apart from the game against Bayern Munich, of course. But in domestically, they're doing exactly what we expect them to do. So good blend, Atletico now, good squad. There are no excuses this season for them not being genuinely in the mix come the last 10 games of the season. Whereas in previous seasons, they haven't been in the mix.
If either Luis Suarez or David Silva If either, you know, Atletico or Real Sociedad win the league, that will be a tremendous story, won't it? That they made the move relatively late in their career, joined a team that, you know, we think actually that could really make a difference. And that experience, I know that's not the whole story, but it would be a fascinating story for either of those two guys, wouldn't it?
Especially Luis Suarez, having left Barcelona. I think David Silva coming back to Spanish football is a boost for everyone, boost for Real Sociedad, of course, but having spent 10 years in the Premier League, it would be a great story, but not as great as if Luis Suarez was to score the winning decisive goals in the league title race and beats, you know, Barcelona by a point or two. So the potential is there for Atletico. I mean, it's as I say, there's no excuses. They've got the squad, they've got the quality, they have the right manager, but they, you know, have to make sure they continue this consistency. It's 23 unbeaten in La Liga now, going back to last season. So it's not a flash in the pan. They're not drawing as many as they have done in the past. And, you know, we've all been crying out for, you know, them to get back to their best, to genuinely challenge Barca and Real for the title. Real Sociedad, I don't think for 1 minute will win the league. I hope I'm right. I'd love to be wrong. I'd love for them to still be involved in it, but historically it just tells you that it's going to be, you know, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Atletico Madrid. Real Sociedad will be doing fantastically well if they qualify for Champions League. That would be a huge achievement for them. But I still think it's going to be too much for them to actually win the title.
Right. So Barcelona then, Terry. Right. Here's the positive spin. So they win 5-2. Dembele scores a great goal. Griezmann gets on the score sheet. Messi gets a rest. So that's all the good side. But somehow it's never straightforward with Barcelona, is it? And you know, Griezmann failed to score a penalty. They were pegged back to 1-1. And it was really, you know, they needed Messi to come on. And it certainly helped when Betis went down to 10 men.
Yeah. And again, the chances they concede still has to be a concern for Koeman. Because, you know, Betis got two and they could have had another two or three as well. Attacking, Barcelona were much better. I thought Griezmann played well in the first half, but it was a crushing blow when he missed a penalty. Another poor penalty. It was a poor penalty as well. But he was unlucky on two or three other occasions. He just grazed the post, didn't he? And he looked sharp and lively. He got the goal early in the second half, thanks to that dummy by Lionel Messi. So attacking-wise, I'm mystified as to why Sergio Roberto is continuing to play it right back again as well. When they brought in Serginho Dest, who's on the bench. And, you know, I think that it was a good game for him to play in. Interestingly, when you say that possibly the best player for Betis was a player they part own in Emerson, who's a right back, who's only 21, and yet they've just gone out and bought Serginho Dest, who's 19. So that's it, but it's going to be interesting to see how that materialises over the next year or so with the player from Betis. But Dembele's goal was fantastic. It was a great goal. I mean, we know he's pretty good with both feet, but that was a fantastic strike, and good to see that, you know, he's approaching his you know, his true form. Replaced after 65 minutes, which was wise because we know he's a player that's returning from injury, has a history of injuries. So that was wise to do that. Pedro gets amongst the goals, gets his first goal for Barcelona. He was good again as well. So I think that it was the usual Barcelona type performance. Yes, they relied on Messi. He made a difference when he came on. The, you know, going down to 10 men obviously harms Betis. But it was, I don't think we learned anything new from the performance of Barcelona at the weekend. They've got great players in attack. They can score goals, but they are prone to defensive mishaps and to steg and beaten twice and called upon to make two or three other good saves as well. So these games are normally good, and they were that between these two teams, and that, thankfully, was another entertaining game.
Right, let's take a quick break there. We'll just do a quick plug for the Patreon page. So it's patreon.com/LTEL. Thank you very much to everybody who has joined in so far. We need more people joining in, basically. From $5 for £8.50, I think, is the UK equivalent. You can pay in euros, you can pay in pounds, in dollars, or whatever. I saw Rob Palmer. Remember Rob Palmer, Terry? He used to be a football commentator.
Yeah, I remember him.
I saw Rob in the week, and he said he was listening, and I gave a big preamble into the ad break. And then he said that there was no advert. Basically, we reappeared again half a second later. So you might get an advert, or you might not get an advert. But we're going to carry on talking La Liga very shortly. Welcome back. Don't forget the Patreon page, patreon.com/ltel, so E-L-T-E-L. You'll find it anyway. Send us your cash, basically. Right, so we'll crack on. Getafe versus Villarreal. So Villarreal under Unai Emery are going very strongly, Terry. They obviously were momentarily top of La Liga. After some criticism in the early weeks, their results recently have been good. Paco Alcácer keeps finding the back of the net. Gerard Moreno weighing in with goals. And Getafe, who we've got used to seeing as a sort of rock-solid machine, scored one absolutely stunning goal. But other than that, they've got a few problems.
Yeah, the problems come from the previous game where Damian Suarez was suspended. What we see from Getafe, if I can explain briefly quickly, that Bordalas picks around about 13 players on a regular basis. Yeah. So you don't see him dip down into... So David Timo, for instance, comes on in every game and plays in different positions. So this week they had Damian Suarez and Oliveira, the left-back. Suarez suspended, Oliveira injured. And Bordalas decided somehow to crowbar Timo back into the team and instead of doing the obvious thing. So they started off with... Neon was left-back. They had a centre-back in Kabako at right-back. Another two centre-backs playing in the middle of defence. Timo was playing in midfield, in central midfield, which meant Maximovic had to go and play wide on the right. So that broke up that midfield base that they have with Arambari and Maximovic. The straightforward answer would have been to have played Neom at right-back. That's fair enough. And then play Cucurella at left-back. Mm. And then bring in, you know, square pegs for square holes further up the pitch. But what he did was, as I say, relies on 12, 13 players. You can start in 11 and then one or two strikers and David Timo. We don't see a big squad at Getafe. It is there, but he doesn't use it. And then from then on, he made a substitution after 31 minutes. At that time, they were 2-1 down and it was a mess. But what stood them in, what held them together was their aggression, enthusiasm, determination, their spirit. So whatever system Bordalas threw at them, they went from 4-4-2 to a 3-5-2 to a 4-3-3, players chopping and changing positions all over the pitch. That aggression, determination, spirit and belief actually kept them in the game for a lot longer than it should have done. So they're the attributes that Getafe have in an abundance, but they don't have the ability to start playing players all over the place. Cucurella ended up playing left back. That was his best position. They brought Victor Mejiejo, who's on loan from Atletico Madrid, for David Timor. They smartened it up in the second half. Although they conceded another goal, there was a more of a threat that they could actually, you know, get the equaliser. So that was the big problem. That's why I had to go and sit in the dark room afterwards, because literally every 10 minutes, Getafe were changing positions, changing their shape, going from one system to the other. It looked horrible. It was untidy. And Villarreal, on the other hand, were the opposite. You know, the 4-3-3 suits them. It actually suits Gerard Moreno playing wider on the right, coming in on his left foot. He still links up well with Alcácer. Those two had the quality to beat this makeshift back four that Getafe played, or makeshift 3-5-4, whatever systems they employed during the game. And I've made the point for a long while now, Parejo is a good player in a midfield three. And alongside Trigueros, with Ribora sitting deeper, that system suits Villarreal perfectly well. And their quality shone through. You know, they managed the game well. Good players, played well. And, you know, they didn't concede many chances. The goal from Arambari was sensational. But Villarreal were good winners.
Right, let's go to Valladolid Athletic. So, really important result for Valladolid, who have been struggling so far this season. And, you know, lots of big trouble for Athletic. They're 14th in the league, but only 3 points above Valladolid, only 3 points off the bottom, aren't they? It's very, yep. It's very congested, the whole table at the moment. And, you know, sort of similar problems for Athletic, isn't it? They've scored less than a goal a game this season.
And the goal in this game was an 86-minute penalty to make it 2-1. Yeah. And that was their second attempt on goal on target. Mm. They had a header from Villalibre just around the owl mark. That was it. They're too structured in their positional play in terms of the defence and the midfield, and they have no structure to the attacking players in the front four. And watching the games, it's so hard to pin them down where the front four are playing. I don't mind a bit of fluidity, but at times there's nobody in the box. Mignane comes deep, Iñaki Williams goes wide, Raúl García drops deep. Mulcio played at the weekend, which was surprising. He's a decent player and he's been doing well, but Alex Berenguer, they paid 12 million for from Torino recently, has been playing well, but he was on the bench. So there are some issues. They don't hurt opponents. That's the problem. They're nice, neat and tidy. The midfield players don't get forward. The fullbacks are not getting forward. There's some big issues at Athletic Club that need resolving. Having been one manager sacked already this season, I would imagine that Garitano is sailing close to the wind, if I'm being perfectly honest.
Yeah, so you wouldn't be surprised if he went, would you? So we're recording now, Monday lunchtime, aren't we? So, it's a classic time to sack a manager, isn't it? The November international break.
Yeah, it was vital, its first win of the season. They did everything right. They didn't make any errors. Athletic did on both goals. Both goalkeeping errors, I think, from Unai Simon. And the Athletic didn't hurt the opposing defence, whereas Valladolid were rock solid at the back. Hervias is a good inclusion, a right winger playing at right back. That gives them more going forward. And then when they got ahead 2-0, he was hooked off and they put Luis Perez on, who was a proper right back. So they just made sure the minor details were correct. As I said about an earlier team, Valladolid managed the game well. They weren't under pressure until the 86-minute goal from Iñaki Williams from the penalty spot. And it was important for them to get their first win of the season. I have a soft spot for Valladolid. I don't know why. I think they have a small budget. Perhaps it's Ronaldo as chairman, as owner of the club. But I think they're a really honest, hard-working team with a small budget that have a style of playing, that know what they're doing. And this win, I think, will set them off now and things will improve as the season goes on.
Sevilla, they're not impressed at all, really, have they? From the early weeks when we were talking about whether they might be contenders. I know they've got games in hand. They only played 7 games. So an important win for them, wasn't it? It was a hard-fought win over Osasuna by 1-0. But I suppose, you know, they got there.
There's a fragility at Sevilla, you know, between the supporters and Lopetegui. I'm not saying for one moment he's going to get the sack. I'm not saying that Monchi is going to be under pressure to do something. But the Sevilla supporters are... I made a point a year ago that playing the style of football that Lopetegui wants, Sevilla have to win games, otherwise their supporters won't suffer it.
Yeah.
They're lucky there's no one in the stadium at the moment.
Yeah.
They had the ability to win the Europa League, which should hold him in good stead. But God, they can be dull to watch at times. You know, lots of possession, lots of changing direction of the attacking play. Don't get the ball in the box enough. They'll be pleased that Ocampos got a goal. It was from a penalty spot. They got the 1-0 win. It was full of anxiety, the performance. They know on the back of recent poor results, they're falling away from a title bid. I don't think they're going to be anywhere near the title race that we thought there was going to be at the start of 4 weeks ago. We were still saying this Sevilla team could, you know, got the draw at Chelsea. They're looking good in the Champions League. And we're thinking that, you know, they can be the fourth team. Unless they improve, they're not even going to go in next season's Champions League. It's a fine balancing act from Lopetegui. He has to win games. You know, we talked in the previous podcast about their struggles last week in the Champions League at home, where they did get the goals because the urgency had to be there. They were 2-0 down. But at the weekend, you know, they weren't peppering the goal. It was a hard-fought win. Osasuna, a decent team, hard to break down. But Sevilla need to find some more inspiration in attack.
Which brings us on to a coach who has been sacked then. So Elche 1, Celta Vigo 1. It was the Friday night game. They got an equaliser. So they fell behind early on, didn't they? To a penalty fault. Got an equaliser, Santi Mina. But that was the end of the road for Oscar Garcia. Where are they in the table? They're just above the drop zone, I think, at the moment, aren't they, Celta? They are 17th, in fact, yeah.
Yep.
But, you know, given what you've said in recent weeks, it was no great surprise.
Yeah, and I did a programme on La Liga TV last week. A really good programme, actually. One of the most enjoyable ones I've done, where we were talking about the dressing room and stuff like that. And we were to Phil Jackson, it was with Kike De Lucas and Sid Lowe and Pete Jensen. And Kike De Lucas, the ex-Chelsea player, and we were talking about how they've managed superstars in American sports and stuff like that. It's a really interesting topic. And he is an agent of some of the Celta Vigo players, and he is an ex-Celta Vigo player. And he was telling us a story about how Oscar Garcia is designated, it's called a commission at the club. So they've got five captains. Now, we know it's a done thing in Spain where they have four, but he's done it in terms of nationalities. So there was a captain at the club who was the only English-speaking player. He was in his own group.
Oh, so he's his own captain.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you're going to create cliques like that, so there was a captain for the Spanish players, there might have been a captain for the Galician players, separate from the Spanish players. And to do that, it just smacked of how many problems are you looking for to have, you know, five different captains he called it the commission. And I'm thinking that sums up his approach to team selection, tactical selections, far too complicated. And it was driving me mad because I think they're underachieving. I think they've got good players. They've got good young players as well. I don't think they're a million miles away from being close to Real Sociedad in terms of individual ability and with their young player policy. But they need the right manager. They're talking Eduardo Berizzo, who, you know, took them to European football and nearly to a Europa League final. And they're talking about him coming in as his replacement. So, you know, that I think that would be interesting to see. I actually quite liked Berizzo in his previous spell in Spanish football.
Oh, they were good then, weren't they? Yeah.
Hard done at Sevilla as well. When he was diagnosed being ill with cancer. And he had them. Nolito is there. Santi Mina is back there. So some familiar, you know, players that he is the obvious choice. But I think Oscar Garcia, it was just, you didn't know what you're getting. I'm looking at this week, they play 4-3-3. That's what they started with anyway. And there's, you know, players missing that you think should be playing. Hugo Mayo come back in from the cold, who's been left out recently. And he actually come in for a player who's been playing well. Sergio Carrera, the youngster, was playing well at right back or right wing back. And yet Hugo Mayo comes back in, you know, I think he should have been in earlier. But with Carrera playing as well as he has done, it probably was harsh to leave him out. So, it's no surprise. There's five changes in the team again this week. So he's searching for a winning formula and he didn't find it.
Leaves us with one more game, Levante versus Alaves. I referred to the red card earlier. So Lucas Perez had given Alaves the lead. This, you know, this is looking like a game that, you know, between two relegation battlers. But we'll see. I mean, who knows with La Liga this season. Then Edgar Mendes got himself sent off. I mean, imagine being that manager, Terry, and you go down to 10 men because he's picked a spare ball back on the pitch.
Yeah, I don't know what he was thinking. Was it worthy of the second yellow, though?
But it is. I think it's one of the things in the rules, isn't it? I think if you deliberately stop the game by doing that, I think.
Where did he get the ball from? I've seen the incident. There was a ball just hanging around and.
Yeah, he sort of wanders off, doesn't he? Because it's not entirely obvious when you first saw it, because you weren't sure where. Yeah, so
but a corner play, wasn't it?
Yeah, and so he goes wandering off, doesn't he? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know what he's thinking. Wandering off when the game was on.
Yeah,
kicking a ball on. It was absurd. And it didn't do Alaves any favours. They were ahead at the time as well. Then it conceded an equaliser and did well to hang on for the draw. Levante had clear chances. Sergio Leon misses an absolute sitter when he hits the post from 4 yards out with a header, centre goal.
Yeah.
How he missed that, I don't know. Even I don't know, and I've missed a few in my time. So it was a game Levante should have won. So points dropped by Levante. Alaves were kicking themselves. They got ahead after 3 minutes. And, you know, Edgar Mendes doing something as ridiculous as that. I nearly got sent off for it once. I was coach. I was Wickham Wanderers and we were at Brighton and it was the Withdean. Do you remember the Withdean?
Oh, I do, yes.
With the running track and stuff like that. And Brighton had this habit at the time. I think it was Mickey Adams was manager. He was a former teammate of mine. And they had this habit of million ball boys when they needed the game to be quick. And then when they were leading, they all disappeared. And I think we were holding on to a lead. And every time the ball went out, a ball was thrown on so quick, it was ridiculous. And at one stage, the ball came to me on the bench for a throw-in. And another ball appeared and they took the throw-in quickly. So I threw the other ball back on. And the ref stopped it and I nearly got sent off. So I did it for a reason. I knew what I was doing. And it did stop the game. And actually, the referee did agree with us that it had to stop. You know, there might be 20 ball boys. So every time it literally went out over the line, another ball was thrown on. It was too much. So, but in this case, he wasn't doing that, was he, Edgar Mendes? I don't know what he was doing. At least I had a reason.
Yeah. Wasting time 34 minutes into the game, having just been booked. Yeah. That's what he was doing. Yeah. Yes. Anyway, on that madness, we will leave it there. Obviously, an international break coming up, so there is no La Liga coming up this week, but we will do something for the Patreons. We will be back recording something soon and enjoying the internationals, particularly those friendlies. What a great idea to squeeze those in. Oh, perfect.
And travel all around the world, footballers.
Yeah.
You know, getting on aeroplanes, flying all around the world. They don't all travel in private jets, I promise you. So some of those South American players that have got to go off and play and, you know, to far-flung places in Europe to meet up with their teammates, they're not all travelling on private jets, I promise you. So just what we need in this this current climate.
Yeah, very interesting decisions. Anyway, stay safe and happy, everybody, and enjoy the international football, and we'll be back talking La Liga soon.